Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Hello and welcome to Sentimental Garbage, the podcast where we talk about the culture we love that society sometimes makes us feel ashamed of. My name is Caroline and I'm just some guy's wife now. And she's not judging, she's watching with her opinions, which is allowed. It's Ella Riz-Bridger.
Hi friend, how nice to be back.
Hi, how nice to monetize a conversation about my personal life with you.
It is strange to be monetizing this conversation we have been having for months. More than a year.
Well, you know, the beginning of the last season of Sentimental Garbage, I was called Weddings with Lauren Bravo, friend of the pod, Lauren Bravo. And it was just after I got engaged. And it felt like this nice thing of like, I am thinking a lot about weddings and their cultural effect and how that cultural effect is bleeding down to me, the prospective bride, and how I'm going to make choices and what choices I will make. And now it feels fitting to open the new season with Weddings Part 2 of like, what did I get right? What did I get wrong? What did I think I would feel versus how I actually felt? And you were my maid of honor. So,
and that's nice.
You know, let's just start at the very beginning, which is like, so you've decided you're going to nominate a person in your life to be a member of your unpaid staff for a year. This is like, I think, probably one of the most charged dynamics within female culture, right? There's been like a slew of movies about it, like a lot of rom-coms base themselves in bridesmaids and things, you know, like it's a thing.
It's a thing. And I think it's strange because it's really the key point in your life since school where you choose your favorite.
Yeah.
You rank and list all your friends.
Mm-hmm.
And then you, as we've discussed a lot, you choose some of them to come to the wedding. And from that group who are coming to the wedding, you choose some who can come to the hen do.
Yeah.
And then if you're having lots of bridesmaids, you choose some of those women to be your bridesmaids. And then you choose one to be the maid of honor. And the same is presumably true for the groom. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. So it is this kind of process of like, yes, it's about you and the person you've chosen and the subculture you've created together as a twosome.
A subculture of two. A subculture, as we've said on this podcast many times.
Yeah. But it's also about social whittling.
It's about social whittling. And I think my biggest lesson from your wedding, if I may draw lessons so early in the pod,
yeah,
was that a wedding is not about two people. It is about a lot more people.
Yeah.
It is about everybody. And that was very nice, but also very eye-opening.
Mm-hmm.
As someone who had a lot of conversations with you about what quirky, non-traditional things could a wedding be?
Mm-hmm.
And this is, you know, before you got engaged and after you got engaged. You know that thing where you talk about how you get married in a trouser suit and have a little lunch?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it was interesting to me how quickly it became clear, like, oh no, this is about two families and two sets of friends and also the wider range of acquaintances and, mm-hmm, you know, people who make dresses and people who do flowers. And there's a whole, it's a whole web of connections, mm-hmm, a wedding. And all you're having to negotiate and kind of go through all of that at every single step.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't really do that very much in adult life.
Yeah.
This thing of who should go where? What should they do? How can we construct a dynamic out of a lot of disparate people who are only connected via us? We are the nexus of this,
yeah,
of, yeah, this web, which is fascinating.
And that doesn't just include friends and family, but that includes like the musician meeting the venue manager. The view, like, isn't like the musician that you chose meeting the manager that you chose meeting the celebrant that you chose. It's like yeah, the only thing these people have in common is that you have asked them to be in a place.
You know, I was
day.
Having brunch with some people I know and some people I don't know the morning after your wedding, and I was like, in this very small town,
yeah,
very far away. And I was thinking, there is no situation in the world in which I would be having brunch with this collection of people, except that all of us know Caroline.
Yes.
Or Gavin.
Yeah.
And that was really, to me, felt like the point of the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
To be like, we have come with a singular purpose. Very, you know, Christmas.
Yeah.
Following a star.
Yeah, it is this thing of of the many lessons I have learned from having a wedding, which I will impart on you, the listener, now, even though you might not care at all. Like, this is, I'm going to try. I think there's a real temptation after you've had a wedding that's been in any way successful to be incredibly sanctimonious and position yourself as an authority on weddings, when really all you are is an authority on your wedding.
You've had one wedding.
You've had one wedding, and you were married by the end of it, so therefore it was a success. But there's this kind of tradition in Ireland, and the wedding was in Ireland, that it's 3 days, which I don't generally experience.
I've never been to a 3 day wedding.
Yeah. So you have the drinks the night before, you have the full day, obviously, and then you tend to have like a day two, like a barbecue or something the day after. I'm sure lots of people do this, but it's like particularly prevalent among Irish people, probably because, you know, traditionally lots of people coming from rural places and therefore have to stay somewhere for a while.
This is what I was thinking about. Thinking about, is it also to do with immigration? Like, does it stick around because so many people have left the country from different places, and it's like, and now you have come back, and you're not going to come back for just one night.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's nice.
It was really nice. And what I would say is that I walked in on Friday night into this back room of a bar where everyone I know had taken various insane transport measures to get to this place, which was in rural Kerry, which was either they flew to an airport and had to get either a bus, a lift, a taxi, my brother after work just like ferrying them down or whatever, to this random okay bar with a rented back room. And I had a total fucking panic attack. And I just couldn't. And not panic attack in the sense that I was like hyperventilating or anything, but it was like I just could not relax. I could not connect with the moment. All I could think was, I am responsible for occupying these people's bank holiday weekend. They have spent so much money getting to this place that has really nothing. I mean, it's a very charming town, but
it was
like,
very charming, yeah.
Not like a ton to recommend. It's not like, for example, someone getting married in Malaga and then you get to spend the week in Malaga. You know, like,
I mean, I think I prefer this, but
sure.
If you want to invite me to a wedding in Malaga, I will. Listeners, I will probably go.
Yeah,
love a wedding, love a holiday.
Right. And so I just felt like, and all evening, people kept coming up to me to reassure me that the vibe was good and correct.
Yes. Yes, I recall that being a key part of Friday night.
Pat her down. Yeah, and then it was like this, and the entire time I was just worrying, oh my God, is this how I'm going to feel tomorrow? Am I going to feel like I can't connect with the moment? I'm so panicked by everyone being around me. I'm so overwhelmed by the attention. And this is also coming from a person who... something I said a lot going up to the wedding is being like, I'm in a lot of work situations where probably too much attention is being like, every few months I have to do an event where it's like, oh, there's a lot of people looking at me at once kind of thing. And I feel like I've metabolized that, and therefore it doesn't freak me out, and therefore I won't be freaked out when it comes around. And then I was totally freaked out.
But that was what was quite good about having the Friday, right? Is that
right.
You were very freaked out on the Friday, and at the actual wedding, you were not freaked out. Well, we'll get into the full wedding day, but once the wedding began, you were not freaked out at all.
No, it was just everything was funny.
And I also think that was true of the guests.
Yeah.
I think the guests, I would now say that I'm a huge advocate of the pre-wedding mixer, because it meant that everybody had found their friends.
Yeah.
Everybody was sure that they all had the same idea of what kind of wedding they were going to.
Mm-hmm.
There was not that sense of, maybe I'll be the only one in fancy dress. Not that your wedding was fancy dress, but you know that feeling of like going into school on an own clothes day?
Yeah. Yes, that is it. Going into school on an own clothes day.
Often that's what going to a wedding feels like. Yeah. You're like, this will be all the people we know, but they'll all be doing a different thing. And maybe I will be the only one in a wedding, wedding guest outfit. I don't know. There's sometimes a feeling when you go to a big event of being like, ooh, what will happen? It's like probably the same things as happen every day.
Because
that was the nice thing about your wedding, was it was very special, but it was also very much like, oh, these are our friends from every day. And here are some new friends from there every day. It felt very much part of our lives, which I really liked.
Yeah, I really felt that way too, of like, it's a hard thing to be like, I want it to feel special, but I don't want it to feel like I'm cosplaying as a life that I don't have and don't want, you know? And I think that's a weird line.
Well,
in
so much
bridal
of,
culture.
So much of wedding is cosplay.
Yeah.
It's cosplaying. We live in this big house. We're just throwing a party.
Imagine if we lived in this big house.
We live in this country house. We've kind of got a lake. Don't worry about it. We've got a swing that overlooks a lake. We just live here. This is normal for us. This is just a normal party that we might have.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a weird thing for us to accept. And I think you do have to accept it, that there is a measure of fancy dress. There is a measure of pretending about a wedding.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, why are we here? Why are we here in this big house? We're here because our own house is not nice or big enough to have a
neither
wedding.
Neither nice nor big enough.
Or licensed for marriage. But
I think it's weird. It's like, it makes weddings such a sentimental garbage subject because they are so easy to make fun of because of the grand pointlessness of them and the point, the kind of the odd formal useless fripperies within each of them. Like the first dance, the dad's speech, giving her away. No one can see the bride until, you know, until the she's going up the aisle. And if they see her before that, it's going to be awful kind of thing. All these traditions that exist and seem so stupid, but actually in the context of the beats of the day are like everything. You're like, oh, I see the reason for this. I see the reason for this.
And even when I couldn't see the reason, I was like, yes, this feels correct.
Yeah.
And I think that was really interesting to me, having spent all this time talking about like, ooh, you can be any kind of bride you want. And it's like, no, you will be a standard bride.
Yeah.
The bride does the thing because that's what she does. And the father of the bride does his thing because that's what he does. And the groom does the thing and the best man does the thing. And I think I was surprised by how traditional a wedding you had and how inevitable and easy having a traditional wedding felt. And every time you were like, maybe I'll do this thing a bit differently, it was like, oh God, why? That's going to take ages and no one will like it.
That's it.
And I think it was bizarrely comforting to be like, oh, we do this because this is what we do as a culture. We fall into these rhythms because these are the rhythms we have decided mark this occasion.
Yeah.
It felt very much like you were doing something very old and very traditional. And of course you are. You're getting married. It's as traditional as it gets. And it was interesting to me that everything felt that it had a place. I mean, I think I'm right that the maid of honour and the bride didn't used to speak.
Yes, yeah.
And so that was nice.
Yeah, so it was very important to me that, like, as many women talked all day as men did, you know?
And you managed that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My celebrant was a friend of the pod, Jen County. My the kind of the longest reading was from Sarah Griff performing a Hira Lindsay Bird poem. Then a speech by you, a speech by me. Like, I felt really good about it. I was like, no, I basically have only one objection to the modern wedding industrial complex, which is that women put all the work into it and then they are sort of invisible in a weird way on the day. Yes, everyone looks at the bride and yes, she is the focal point. But the amount of weddings I have been to where like the bride's essential character has been ignored and no woman has spoken at all day. That really upsets me.
I think it's interesting, isn't it, about the bride's essential character being ignored?
Yeah.
Because it's part of that cosplay thing of, I'm going to put on a big white dress and a ton of makeup and we will pretend all day that I am a beautiful silent virgin Barbie.
Mm-hmm.
And I will be having fun, but I will be having fun in a feminine and approved way.
Yeah.
And I think that is what's hard about a traditional wedding, right, is that there's not a lot of wriggle room for how you feel about gender or how you feel about yourself.
Mm.
You can slot into those roles easily and there's obviously a pressure to do so.
Yeah.
Because, for example, you had a hair and makeup lady.
Yes.
Which was surprising to me.
Surprising to me too. Yeah.
Because
there were several choices I made where I was like, I'm surprised I'm making this choice. It's against what I thought I would want, but actually makes total sense and I feel fine with. You know, it didn't feel like I was capitulating or, you know, selling off some essential belief. It was like, no, she's good at this.
Right. And I tried to like fight off the makeup lady.
Mm-hmm. Because you don't really wear makeup.
I don't really wear makeup. Yeah. I don't really do very much. And she was impossible to fight off.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually like, nothing on my skin, please. And she was like, painting my face with a brush. And she was like, this is nothing. I was like, well, it's not. And she was like, it's just creams and lotions. I was like, right.
Yeah, that is something.
That is something. But I was glad that she had done it. Mm-hmm. And I think what was really interesting was you and I spending the first 10 minutes after having our makeup done, looking in the mirror, being like, no, too much, yeah, not us. Yeah. And then the rest of the day being like, we are the most beautiful women who've ever lived.
Yeah.
And I think that was interesting too, in giving way to that, in that I have fought off a makeup artist on every photo shoot I've ever had.
Yeah.
Like, the times I have failed to fight it off, I find the pictures terrifying.
Yeah, same.
There's that one for, I did a photo shoot for The Times a few years ago where they put eyeliner all around my eyes like Kate Middleton. And the picture, I look deranged. I look so deranged.
You definitely didn't look deranged, but it's like, it's that thing of like when you, it feels like a departure from your actual self. It has that, I think everyone has that uncanny valley moment where they see a picture of themselves where they've been made up to by somebody who doesn't know them. And it's just like a little to the left of who they actually are. And that is very unsettling.
Which is hard if you're fighting it. And I think the thing about weddings is maybe you just got to lean in to the idea that you are a little to the left of your everyday self.
Yeah.
Because I do think we looked like ourselves. In all the pictures I've seen, we look like Ella and Caroline, just very fancy.
So I did the increasingly popular legal wedding first in near our house in Lewisham, in a borrowed dress and a borrowed veil. And it was really beautiful. And I spent the day then walking around the South Bank with Gav in a wedding dress, which there's a temptation for all weddings for it to be like a hermetically sealed environment where it's like, we've created this little community and now we're going to like seal them all in this country house. But I say to anyone, if you're ever getting married, to have an opportunity where you have to go out and be turned out into the world wild, it is the best experience of your life. People will just applaud. As you walk around, like we're all familiar of the Great Expectations Mrs. Havisham character, or Miss Havisham rather. But I finally got it when I was walking around the South Bank. I was like, I could just do this every other Saturday or whenever I needed a hit and have the best time, because people are just so excited to see, like, oh wow, the Victorian social order is being upheld and she's got a big thing coming out of her head and a white dress and wow, gosh, I've seen something today. I've seen like a D-list celebrity today, you know?
I'm always pleased to see a wedding.
Yeah,
whenever
it's heartening.
Whenever I walk past a wedding, I'm pleased. Whenever I see a bride in the wild, thrilled.
Yeah.
And I think there's something about just being like, those people are having a really happy day.
Yeah.
It's so nice. You hope they're having a happy day. Mm-hmm. I mean, that I think is the thing you can't arrange for a wedding, mm-hmm, is people being truly in love and very happy. And I would say the thing that was the key of your wedding was, not to be too sentimental or garbage, mm-hmm, was it was very full of love and it was very happy and everybody was very happy and full of love.
Yeah.
And I think that's the sort of, you know, the magic element. That's X. You can't solve for it. Mm-hmm. And I've been to quite a few weddings and yours was probably the most full of love. I mean, everybody cried in the speeches, including everyone giving a speech.
And this is something I spoke about in the first wedding episode. Was engagements and the fact that me and Gav were together 8.5 years before we got engaged. And for some of us, not by choice. And
Gavin had to spend a long time thinking of teaching the terriers to bark in tune, to carry the ring to you.
There was obviously, as with all best friends, a long conversation about like, so what the fuck is going on with this proposal already? And we decided that like, oh, he's just teaching some terriers to bark in tune, that's all. And like, the amount of time it took, yeah, he probably could have done that. But I would say that like, and I know, it's funny because once you kind of come out with that kind of information, lots of people come up to you being like, oh, me and my boyfriend are in the same situation. It's like the private agony of many women of like, what's going on? I believe in feminism and we have an equal household, but also will he just ask me to marry him? I would say the huge benefit of being together a long time before you get married is that like, I think for the majority of weddings I've been to, the couple have been together for between maybe 2 and 4 years. And there's like a sense of like, gosh, well, he's lovely and she's lovely and they're probably going to make a really lovely life together. And like, we're dead happy for them. But I feel like there were so many people in that room who had like gone to festivals with us, got on holidays with us, like stayed in our house. You know, like people were like, had a lot of experiences of us as a unit and therefore were rooting for the unit more. And it felt like a much more, I don't know, heightened environment because of it.
I think it wasn't as disparate as weddings often are, because there wasn't that sense of, and the groom, who we kind of know because he's our friend's boyfriend.
Yes,
husband.
Exactly. Yeah.
I would say most of the friends there were people who knew maybe one of you better, but both of you pretty well.
Yeah.
And that was lovely. I think there is something in what you're saying in the long engagement, something else.
It's a long game, you know.
The long game. It meant that there was no sense of like, will they make it?
Yeah.
Ooh, what's this one? It was very much like, oh, this is the... It didn't feel like the beginning of something. It felt like the formalization of something that was already real. And I think that's increasingly true with marriages, right? Yeah. Which is nice, because it's why the divorce rate is dropping.
Yeah.
Because people get married.
People are really sure.
People wait till they're sure. Mm-hmm. Rather than being like, well, I would like to have sex with you. So please.
Yeah.
To the church.
Yeah. Or I'm 23 and I'm the last girl on the shelf in my town. Which is such a recent mindset, and it's so bonkers.
It's so recent and so far away at the same time.
Yeah.
I kept thinking about this, like how we are kind of at least 10 years older than the previous generation. Or not the previous generation, but like maybe a generation and a half ago. Mm-hmm. You know, you read old books and it's like, she's an old spinster of 26.
Oh God, 26 is the real danger age for women in old books, isn't it?
Time to put on a purple gown.
Yeah.
And have a little dog. Which, to be fair, you do have a little dog.
Yeah, I do.
And I wonder whether something about it being such a traditional wedding, but feeling so like freely chosen, you know? Feeling like you were both going into it with your eyes open about everything about the other person.
Yeah.
Which was very much true of the speeches, right? Which was, I felt like everybody was very definitely talking about you and Gavin and your families as they are.
Yeah.
What I found very nice, just kind of a small segue, was how much you talked about Gavin's family and how much Gavin talked about your family. As being like, and now we will learn. Gavin being like, and I hope that we, the days, can learn from the O'Donoghues this thing. And you're very much like, and I long to learn peace from the days.
Yeah.
And I think that that comes from long knowledge and lots of time.
Yeah.
Spent, like, it was lovely to me the way your parents talked about Gavin and the way that, I'm going to cry thinking about it. Oh, no. When you did your speech and Deb's, Gavin's mum, just got up and held you.
Yeah.
Just while you were speaking, just stood up from her chair to put her arms around you. Because you were crying. Caroline cried.
Of course I cried. I cry like recounting the plots of bad films. very podcast.
I didn't cry in my speech, but I cried enough during everybody else's speech to fully soak a napkin. It's true. It's not even a metaphor. It's just what happened.
Just what... but the thing is, like... I mean, there was some fucking chaos getting there, wasn't there?
Yeah, I was sort of wondering to what extent we would talk about the chaos.
Oh, we gotta talk about... Because I think it's important to talk about everything that went wrong at your wedding.
Okay, well, I think what we know is that every wedding there has to be a fuck-up.
Yeah.
And at yours, there were two fuck-ups, and they both happened within...
15 minutes of one
15
another.
Minutes of each other.
And an hour before the ceremony.
Or
2 hours before the ceremony.
Depending.
Depending on who you ask.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think, in hindsight, it was good that they both happened so close together and before the day had really started. Mm. At the time, I could see that.
Uh-huh.
I was thinking at the time, and I remember saying to you, it's fine, it's happening before. It's all happening before, and by the end of the day, we're not even going to be thinking about this ever again.
Yes.
Obviously, I hadn't thought about talking about it on the podcast later.
Here's the thing. There were many fuck-ups in the lead-up to this wedding, and this is something that, like, when I say trad wedding, I don't mean that I chose this very traditional method because I myself have traditional values. I mean to say that I am lazy. I have a lot of focus available to me for the things I care about. And the things I don't care about, they disappear into the ether and are just smoke and figment. And what I don't care about...
Yes, I would say that is true. Yeah, the number of times I would say to you, probably starting a year ago, you're like, Caroline, do you want to talk about this wedding? Is there anything we need to plan for the wedding? And you'd be like, oh, no, I don't think so. It's like 6 months away. It's ages.
Yeah, it's ages. Yeah.
And I'd be like, have you got flowers? And you'd be like, oh, flowers. Yeah, I don't know. I don't really care about flowers. I'm like, right, okay, just another thing to file away for me to think about in the dead of night.
Which is like not for me to like be like, oh, I'm so chill, I don't care. I did care about having a nice day. I just wasn't willing to put in any of the effort that it took for most brides to make a nice day for themselves. I instead put that psychological burden on you.
You put the psychological burden on me and you wrote a book and moved house.
Yeah, yeah. And I also just went to... We went to this venue, and what's quite nice about that is that I went to this place when I was very young with my brother to it's like the halfway point between our house in Cork and our little caravan that we have in Kerry where we go on our summer holidays, and this is the Waypoint Kenmare is the town is called. There was this house where we used to do like water sports, like kayaking and stuff. We used to, like, it was the big treat of like mum, the day was fine and mum had 50 quid in her pocket. It's like, right, we're going to go and do some little activity here. And it was so special. We had so many special days there. I always thought I'm going to get married there. And then I forgot about it completely. And then years later, me and Gavin were passing and he was like, this place is amazing. And it all kind of came back. So it was like the lovely kind of fairy tale childhood wedding dream, right? And then what happened was like, okay, I am not interested in this at all. I have had my moment of remembering the place that I wanted to get married when I was a child. And now I will simply give my money to the people who own this venue and they will do everything. And I will not think about place names or activities that people can do or photo booths or anything or naming a table or anything like that. And I'm just going to like leave it in their capable hands and then fuck off. And because of that, several things happened, which were my fault, I would say.
Yeah. The only thing I want to add is saying to you at one of those conversations, like, why are you not planning this wedding? And you saying, Ella, if I wanted to be a wedding planner, I'd be a wedding planner. Which... I don't. So I'm going to pay someone who does want to do it to do it. And I think, broadly speaking, a great lesson in being like, do the things you enjoy. And if you're not enjoying it, stop. When the fun stops, stop.
When the fun stops, stop.
And I think it's important to remember that before we get into the fuck ups.
Yeah.
That the fuck ups occurred, at least in part, because when the fun stopped, you stopped.
Yeah.
And
when the fun stops, I always stopped. Like, one day I'll walk away from this podcast and there will be no explanation other than it wasn't fun anymore.
Yeah, and I think that's a great trait. But I think the fuck-ups on the day were more than balanced out by the lack of psychic stress you had about this wedding in... I would say you acquired a bit of psychic stress about it in like the 3 weeks beforehand because you were also moving house.
And also realizing it was too late to change anything if I did want to change anything.
Yes, I think you being like, but what if I do now want flowers?
Yeah.
Different flowers. And I think you avoided like 11 months of stress.
By having a couple of fuck ups. Yeah, actually, do you know what? They paid for themselves, those fuck ups.
The fuck ups were paid for by you being like, I've got 6 months to this wedding and I'm not going to think about it at all. I've bought a dress online. It's in a bag. You think it suits me? It's in the bag. And that's done.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I think
that was great.
That
was so great.
The lack of faff.
Yeah.
Because for most people, planning a wedding is a full-time job that they have to do on top of their real job. And you just didn't. You just didn't do any of it. And that's what I want to say before we talk about the fuck-ups is if you decide that one day of your life is less important than 11 and a half months of your life, there will be fuck-ups, but I think that's reasonable.
And thank you. And I don't think that is, it's not so much a symptom of me. Again, I'm not trying to like pose myself as this very cool, chill bride thingy or whatever.
No.
Or within that sort of trope. It's more that when you are a freelancer, you have such a deep sense of how much your time is worth. And that, like, yeah, as a freelance writer on and podcaster, I spend a great deal of my time sort of frittering away and just sort of like looking at trees and walking around the park with you and just doing this and that and the other. But I regard that time as quite precious to the generation of new ideas. Any minute I spend that is like looking at the T's and C's of a florist's website or looking at horrible wedding photography, most of which is fucking terrible, and then reading the T's and C's of that website, is like, that is focus that should be going on something that matters and also something that pays me. So I had a very deep sense of like what my hourly rate is and whether I would save money giving that responsibility to somebody else.
I think that's fair. And also, you don't find it fun.
It's not fun.
Whereas I can see that you know me, I love to plan an elaborate little party. Mm-hmm. You've had book launches where I've been like, time to stay up all night, sticking little bunting together. Yeah. What if the bunting said the name of the character? And I find it very enjoyable. I love to sew little things. I love to make little things. I love to be cutting and sticking all day long. Mm. You hate it.
There was a part during all this where you said to me, really, it should be me who's planning the wedding and you who's planning the hen do. And you were right.
That would have been better. Yeah, that would have been a much better system. But I think what's important about that is the wedding was beautiful and the hen do got a write-up in the Sunday Times. It turns out that when we both step out of our comfort zones and you pay a wedding planner and I meticulously plan a hen do with many little spreadsheets, we're both fine.
We're both fine. On to the fuck-ups.
Onto the fuck-ups.
The first, which is all that anyone really wants to hear about.
Yeah, it's the juicy part.
The first fuck-up, which I don't think you'd even arrived in the country by this point, was me not understanding the high euphemistic language of bridal chat. When I was given a tour of the venue, I was told, and here is where the bridal party readies and collects themselves. And I went, great, a place to get ready. Readying yourself and getting ready are two different things within the bridal language. Getting ready is obviously hair straighteners, ring lights for makeup, makeup artists, plugs, chairs, all the bits. Readying yourself is taking a few deep breaths and turning to your friend and saying, okay, okay. And I thought they were offering me one thing when in fact they were offering me a small room with a blue couch in it where I was like, but I am staying in a tiny Airbnb. There's nowhere for me to even bring my makeup artist. This is the day before the wedding and I realize I have nowhere to get ready.
Yes. And I think that is literally you just, the words readying yourself and get ready, having different, but I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because it's that euphemistic language. The euphemistic language about weddings.
Yeah.
We would never say, this is your room to ready yourself.
Yeah.
But not your room to get ready in daily life.
No, it's insane. And it's insane that they would think that somebody who's never had a wedding would understand that. And honestly, I couldn't believe they've never had this problem before. But apparently they've never had. Can you believe that?
Yes.
Like,
because people have put themselves in the bride headspace of, and I will become a different person who needs a room to gather myself, to ready myself. And I think part of your problem was that you didn't put yourself in the bride headspace until pretty much you were in a wedding dress walking down the aisle.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was so, that was so stressful because I had to, what ended up happening was, so I was in an Airbnb, everyone I knew was an Airbnb, everyone was basically in a two-room bungalow for the most part, except for Gavin's aunt and uncle, who I met for the first time a year ago, Tony and Leslie, and their son and daughter, Matt and Emma. They had rented a large house at the corner of the town with like five bedrooms or whatever and a huge sitting room and all that kind of stuff. And they offered their house to get ready in, which we were there at 9 a.m. You'd never met them. I've met them a handful of times. And we're like, okay, we're here at 9 a.m. and we're leaving at 2 o'clock. And like, we're going to spend this whole time
in your
house.
This whole precious morning.
Yeah.
This whole like deeply symbolic, freighted morning with these people we don't know. And I would say it was really one of my favorite parts of the wedding.
Yeah, I loved
because
it.
Because it was so pure. It was purely what a wedding is for. Was Gavin's family being like, of course, get ready here. And Gavin's cousin's wife, me just being like, I can't steam this dress because the woman has put a curl in my hair. I have curly hair. This is the wedding madness. Yeah. This woman has curled my hair and she says, if I steam this dress, I'll go back to my normal curls, which are less good than her curls. So we met 20 minutes ago. Here's a steamer.
Yeah, it was lovely. And like that family also very prepped to receive that kind of thing.
Oh, they were great.
Suzanne, Matt's wedding. Suzanne, who is Matt's bride and who, again, I only met once at her wedding. I was in the room where my wedding dress was, trying to tape my own breasts to my own rib cage and not succeeding. And she came in and she was like, oh, sorry. I was like, no, please come in. How are you at taping breasts to rib cages? And she was like, yeah, give it a go. And like, again, a woman I have met once, like very much nipples out, like my hands over my head, her precisely measuring a piece of tape against my tit, cutting it and sticking it. Like, I was like, this, I love this. Actually, I sort of love this.
And you know, when you forgot your bag and her being like, well, take my bag. I carried it on my wedding day. You carry it. It was a present from my mother-in-law.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is what weddings are for. And like your niece just kind of hanging around watching everything incredibly carefully.
Which is where we got the quote from the top of this episode, which is, I'm not judging. I'm watching with my opinions, which is allowed. Robin is 11 and I love her.
Strong opinions, strong feelings and strong opinions. Mm-hmm. Never voiced, which I really was like, wow, you're keeping it all close. Mm-hmm. But I thought that was the moment when I was like, oh, this is why we have weddings like this. Mm-hmm. Because it's important to be part of the new family. It's important to be like, we are building a new thing where Gavin's cousin's wife will now be perfectly comfortable handling my breasts.
Right? It was just so lovely. And this is like, as we get into the further fuck-ups, with every fuck-up, except for one fuck-up, the thing that rushed to meet it was so much more delightful than the planned thing. Because what I've mostly learned about weddings is like, I feel about 5% closer to Gavin. We were in love then, we're in love now. We're really happy to be husband and wife. We can't stop saying it to people. But I feel so much closer to everybody in my life because and to, I guess, people and community in general, because you realize that people are waiting for an excuse to help you. And because of how we've set up our society, they don't feel like it's their place to most of the time. You know?
That, I think, was really clear. I think, and that's what the fuck-ups are for.
Yeah, that's what they're for. They're for somebody else in your life who you didn't expect to rise to the occasion. On to the second fuck-up.
Go. Which is the second fuck-up?
Okay, well, actually, this is...
Because the second and third...
This is first fuck-up B, actually.
First fuck-up B.
So the readying yourself / getting ready, that was fuck-up one. This is fuck-up 1B. So because I didn't think I would have a place to get... I thought I was getting ready at the venue, and then I would simply walk down the lawn and into the arms of my new husband.
Such a beautiful image.
Such a beautiful image. I was obsessed with it. And I, therefore, did not arrange a wedding car. Because I didn't... If the ceremony's happening on the lawn and then we're just going inside to have dinner, like, what's the point of having a wedding car if you're not going from the chapel to a venue, right? That's what a wedding car is really supposed to be for. But luckily, my brother Shane, who is my next eldest brother, I have two brothers. One of them is very close in age to me. His name is Rob. The next one up is about 7 years older than me. His name is Shane. He still lives in Cork, so we see very little of one another. I love him dearly, but like, we definitely aren't in each other's lives on a daily basis. But he works at an Audi dealership, and I called him 2 days before the wedding, and I was like, you're going to have to find me a wedding car. I'm really sorry. But you're just going to have to sort this out for me. Not only did he find it for me, he made me some custom plates for it as well, which is very sweet. And so on my wedding day, when we were getting ready in Gavin's aunt and uncle's rented house, I was then picked up by my big brother, who was also my driver for the day, and just like piled my big dress into the car next to him, honked on his Lost Mary, and was ready to go. And we were on our way to the venue, and we got... what will now be fuck up two?
Yes.
A phone call.
Also in the car.
Also in the car.
On me.
In the back seat.
Next to me is Robin.
Yes.
11. Mm-hmm. Flower girl. And Caroline's dad.
Yep. A big character.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
I would say he's slight. Before we picked him up, your brother said he's not going to like going in the back, and I don't think he did.
No, he did not. Yeah, put him in a bad mood for a little while. Yeah,
get in the back.
Put him in the back of an Audi, and then we get a phone call saying, "Hey, what time is this wedding again?" And I was like, "It's at 2:00." Or yeah, it's at 2:00. They're like, "Okay, everyone thinks it's at 3:00."
I would say a real moment. Yeah. And I'm realizing, like, working backwards in my head and thinking, yes, I see exactly what's happened here. I see why some people think 2 and some people think 3. And also thinking, I have to get this phone away from Caroline.
Yeah.
I have to get... Well, I mean, what happened was, if you recall, your nephew rang your brother, his father, didn't know he was on loudspeaker, and was like, Dad... You got to keep Caroline away. You need to delay her. And then when Shane was like, what? He was like, I don't know. Jill told me to ring you. And I was like, in the back, like, What is happening? And then your sister being like, yeah. Some people think it's a bit later, so they're not
here.
No one's really, some people are here. But the moment, I would say, when it was just your teenage nephew being like, Dad, you have to delay Caroline. I don't know why. My auntie told me to ring you.
God, it was awful. Just that coming through in the loudspeaker.
Coming through on the loudspeaker, interrupting Cher.
Yeah.
We've just been driving along listening to Cher, thinking, a wedding, we're all done. Mm-hmm. What could go wrong now? We've gathered ourselves in a different room.
Yeah, the song was just like Jesse James.
It was really beautiful.
It was really nice. Me and my brother just holding hands and singing just like Jesse James and vaping in my wedding dress.
It was great. I wish I had a picture, but all our phones were in the boot of the Audi. Because wedding car.
Because it's the wedding car. And so, yeah, it turns out that the invite said 3 and then it was changed to 2 because the numbers got slightly bigger between us, the invites and the save the dates and the invites, and then it was changed to 2 because for catering they start earlier, whatever. So yeah, then people had to be dragged from the town where this is not, you cannot walk to this location from the town. You need to be driven. There are 2 taxi drivers in this town. Their names are Liam and Niall, and they're not nice men. Sometimes you get Liam's wife. She's okay.
And so alienating, it's like, people
okay, can how can we get people into this venue? And okay, they got
and
there.
What's important is that I could see Caroline's dad being like, I think I will get out of the car with Robin and I will go and stand on this grass verge with my granddaughter and leave my daughter with her friend and her brother to figure this out.
Figure this out, yeah.
And then it was a kind of sort of trying to telepathically communicate with Shane. No more loudspeaker calls. Every call about this must be taken away from Caroline. And I think that was a good call. I think if you are a maid of honour or any kind of bridesmaid or best man and there is a fuck up, your job is to be like, this is not a fuck up for you to handle. Take 10 steps that way and let us make some calls.
It's so strange to have, and then so shortly after this, another fuck up is coming. About 10 minutes later, another phone call came from Ash, the best man, to say that the ceremony musicians had not arrived. And given that they thought that the ceremony was at 2, we are currently in a situation where we are driving around this very much one horse town, trying not to be seen by wedding guests because yes. you cannot break the spell. And burning time between 2 and 3 o'clock. The ceremony musicians very much knew that it was 2 o'clock because it was in all the emails that I sent to them. They used to be in Riverdance together. They told me that several times. They just hadn't turned up. And it was now 2:45. And then my brother rang them and it turns out that they had double booked themselves and that the fiddle player had bought a new phone last week and his Google Calendar dates did not translate to the new phone and he's very sorry.
What was interesting though was trying to get you to accept that it was a Google Calendar fuck up and not maliciousness. And I think that is an interesting thing and worth dwelling on for a second, yeah. if I may.
Sure.
Which is that it was very clear to me that these fuck ups would be in the past so quickly.
Yeah.
And that they would be funny quite quickly.
Mm-hmm. And they are.
And they are funny. It's funny that you put a different time on the reminder text and the invite.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny that a man was just like, a man in your phone, known only as...
Brendan Fiddle.
Brendan Fiddle. It's funny that Brendan Fiddle had fiddled too hard. And just thinking, all we have to do is get past this piece of time
mm-hmm.
and not to let Caroline think that this is some kind of personal slight attack or omen.
Would you like to know what was going on in my head? Because I'm sure how I was behaving. Actually, how would you say I was behaving at this point?
Oh, like a lunatic. Like a person. I would say like a person who's just found out the most like destabilizing news of all mm-hmm. time.
Yeah, like your dad isn't your dad. Like...
That's exactly how you were behaving. You were behaving as if the phone call had instead said, oh, wait, you picked up Peter? You know he's not a real dad, right? I would say, and I could see your brother being like, this emotional reaction is not correctly sized.
Mm-hmm.
There is nothing I can do. Mm-hmm. And him just being like, saying to me, do you think some cups of water would help? And me being like, yes. Some cups of water would really help. Because I could see that he needed a job because he was so keyed up for his job of,
yeah.
I drive.
Uh-huh.
I drive smoothly and correctly.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, I'll get cups of water. And later at the reception, he was like, I knew every time I opened my mouth to speak, I'd say something completely stupid or wrong. So I thought, if I go and get cups of water, then I can be useful and just let the friend do this bit. Like,
oh, I didn't know you had that conversation. That's so sweet.
Shane and I bonded very deeply over that moment.
That's so nice.
I think we're friends now.
Yeah, a real friend in need.
I felt very close to the O'Donoghues as a clan.
Yeah.
You were like a very big and very welcoming clan.
Oh, well, that's nice.
It was very nice.
So now we're in a position where...
No guests, no musician.
Almost everything in my head, the bride, who the social responsibility of this wedding being a total failure will rest on because the star also has... Like, brides are the star. Like, the groom is a guy in a suit, right?
Yes. And also helped by the fact that we knew that Gavin was at the venue.
Yeah.
And I could, in my mind, think, I bet Gavin's having an okay day.
And apparently they were having a great time over there. But this thing of, like, what was happening to me was, I think, I don't know if everybody has this, but I certainly feel it very keenly. And maybe a lot of people who are writers or self-employed have this thing where a certain sense of like, I am not made for real life in a way.
Yes.
And I'm not like trying to do this like terminal uniqueness thing. It's more just like, oh, I don't really have birthday parties because they would go wrong because I can't have that kind of thing.
Oh, pal.
You know, I think I am over that now, but there this huge sense that came over me of like, of course you couldn't have a wedding. Look how much it's all falling apart right now. You had nowhere to get ready because you're not a real bride. You're not real. And then, you know, of course you put the wrong time on the invites. Of course even though you have proof right here in your phone saying, I'll see you on the 26th at 2 o'clock. Of course, the guy didn't show up.
Interesting to me, because you did keep trying to show me and your
brother. I kept showing everyone the email. Yeah.
To be like, I didn't fuck up. I didn't.
Everyone's like, I believe you.
Your first response was, I have to screenshot these emails to send to Gavin so that he knows I didn't fuck up.
Yeah.
And everyone being like, I think Gavin will be fine. Yeah. Maybe just put your phone down, drink some water.
Yeah.
It's going to be okay. And I think, well, I think we keep talking about at the moment is whether you're useful or not.
And I would say it's a big, it's really come
it's,
to
it's
the...
It's a big theme for you at the moment.
From to the surface lately, yeah.
And I do think there's something in having a job where you just make things up. You make things up or you have a chat.
That's it.
Which, you're not bringing in a salary for doing something that the world... Yeah, there's no colleagues around you being like, great job today. Yeah, I mean, I assume that's what happens in offices. I also don't have a job. Just like, there's no one, there's no structure. Yeah. You're just in constant freefall of make a thing up, throw it this way, make something else. And I think particularly when you're throwing out in the phase of your career where you're like throwing out loads of ideas and being like, hope one of these sticks.
Yeah.
There's a sense of being in freefall and just being like, I'm just making this up, I'm making this up, I'm making this up.
Yeah.
And I do think that everyone feels like that to an extent about adult life, is I'm making this up, I'm making this up, let's hope some of this sticks. But I think when you're a writer, that's codified into your entire life.
Yeah, totally. Because everything you do is so steeped in subjectiveness. Like, there is no really right or wrong way to make a book. There's lots of books that do fucking mad things and don't sort of like follow any sort of code, and they're great works of art, and if they're not one now, then maybe people will realize it again in 10 years. It's so steeped in subjectivity, and there's a lot of room to play in that. And so whenever I'm confronted with a task that can be done either rightly or wrongly, whether it's a driving test or sewing a button onto a shirt, something within me fucking freaks out. And I really want to get past it, because I want to fix that.
I feel the same, I think, in the sense of like, I don't want to be graded. And a wedding, like it or not, people will give a grade to.
Yeah.
They will be comparing it to every wedding they've ever been to. And then they will be in their car the next day being like, yeah, I really like that, but I wasn't sure about the food.
Yeah.
The food at your wedding was great.
It was great.
I mean, I don't know. I think it was great. I didn't really eat. Did you eat?
Nope, did not eat. I didn't eat.
Okay. The food may have been great.
The food I've heard was great. And certainly on the tasting day, it was lovely.
Great. I ate a rose of smoked salmon that your mother-in-law made me eat, and then two little petit fours. And you ate...
Some soup
and nothing.
Yeah, a little bit of turbot. Yeah. It's like that feeling of having taken lots of pills without water. Of like, no, how would you expect me to eat when it's just, there's only chalk in my tummy?
It was funny, though, how everybody said brides don't eat.
Yeah.
And people kept telling me, make sure she eats. Your job is to make sure she eats something.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were like, you probably won't eat either. And I was like, you are being ridiculous. We are hungry women.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've never in my entire life, like, not
like,
eaten.
There's a delicious meal there. And you think that Caroline and I are going to skip it because of nervousness at the occasion.
Yeah.
And I kept kind of in my head thinking, we've done a lot of events.
Exactly. Right?
And we always eat.
Like.
And it turns out, no, it was... Thank God for Leslie making a delicious breakfast.
Yeah.
Full of sausages.
If it wasn't for that, we'd be running on fumes.
I had actually put some protein bars in my handbag, but it turned out they were so disgusting that I took one bite and was like, nope, would rather starve.
Yeah. I was very grateful for that breakfast. But I think it's interesting. I think there's so much press around sort of the bridezilla and the crazy bride having the freak out. And certainly if you were a passerby just walking by that driveway where I was standing vaping and freaking out and showing you my phone to prove to you I had made this email and had made this booking, you would be like, oh, look, a mental bride from popular culture's imagination, a mental bride. But I think so much of it just brings out the things you're scared of already and puts them on a platform.
And I think that's probably true for everybody and whatever it is you're scared of.
Yeah.
Because...
Some people are terrified of public speaking. I don't have that problem. So I didn't think about my speech at all as being like a big moment, really.
I do not love public speaking. Yeah. And I thought about my speech for 3 days.
Yeah.
And I was so scared.
You were so good.
Thanks, pal.
It was so beautiful.
I tried really hard.
It was really well written and really beautiful. Sorry, well written, our least favourite word ever.
Well written. Thank you. I think whatever your fears are, a wedding will make you look at them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if your fear is of commitment, if your fear is of having your family in one room, mm-hmm. if your fear is, like, if you are, like, ashamed or nervous about anything in your life, mm-hmm. the wedding will uncover it.
Yeah.
And the wedding will make you look at it. Like, you know.
It's like when they inject dye into an organ.
That's exactly what a wedding is.
Yeah.
And it makes you be like, oh, I have a bunch of unresolved body image issues.
Yes, I think that's the one that comes for most brides.
And I think that comes for most brides. And, like, it's why you get all those brides who are like, I'd never go on a diet. And then it's like, I have to diet now. And you're like, what is wrong with you? Mm. You have gone wrong. Mm-hmm. Or, like, you know, if your fear is about not having enough friends or, like, not having enough money or, like, mm-hmm. any shame or fear you have, and yours is being chaos, mm-hmm. the wedding will expose them. And I think in a way that is bad and in a way it's also very nice.
Yeah.
Because you know what, Caroline? Let's say it here on the public record. They were fuck-ups.
Yeah.
You should have put the same time on both.
Yes, I know. I fucked it up.
You fucked it up.
But so did Gavin. But for some reason, Gavin. He's not getting the flag for it because he's a very useful person.
He's not on the podcast. If Gavin was here, I would say it to both of you. But ultimately, everyone was coming to the wedding of Caroline and Gavin, not two perfect people who are never chaos. They're coming to the wedding of Caroline and Gavin, two perfect people who are frequently chaos. Mm. And it was fine. People want to see you get married, not Barbie and Ken.
I felt like we were kind of Barbie and Ken.
Yeah, Barbie and Ken with a fuck up. Fuck up Barbie and Ken.
So that was like most of the fuck ups out of the way before the ceremony even began. We sort of, then again, to go back to the thing of like people in your life are waiting for an opportunity to help you.
God, everyone loved the fuck ups because it gave so many people like, great, I'm going to run around the town knocking on doors for wedding guests I don't know and bringing them to the ceremony place. And then Jen, the beautiful celebrant and friend of the pod, Tash Hodgson, she's kind of the friend of the pod here.
Yeah, she's done.
She's a friend of ours, certainly.
A friend of mine is a friend of the pod.
Friend of the pod, Tash Hodgson. Tash and Jen, Tash texted me like, what can we do? What is happening? The vibe is great here, which the thing I kept saying to you over and over was, the vibe is great there. They're happy, they're fine, they're chill.
The sun is out, they're all walking around by the lake. It's really fun.
They're all having a lovely day.
I was like, wow, I wish I was fucking there. Instead, I'm in this Audi on the outskirts of Kinmare.
And I think there were three things. There were two things that really helped. Three people, two things. Mm-hmm. And they were Tash and Jen, who both separately messaged me like, what needs to happen? And I was like, find each other. You don't know each other, but find each other. I was like, Jen is the one in the gold dress. Tash is the one in the sort of waterfall thing with flowers on it. Find each other and together I know you will solve this problem. Find if they have a sound system. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm going to get Caroline to send you a song that she wants to walk down the aisle.
I had to make a playlist.
Make a little Spotify playlist.
Yeah.
Which was fine. And what I've learned from that is nobody gives a fuck about the ceremony musicians.
Okay. Here's a big thing. I think everybody has a thing that they, even I, someone who was not really planning their own wedding, even as they were planning their wedding. So everyone has a thing, a non-negotiable in their head that they're like, this is really important to me. For Gavin, it was designing all of the invites by hand and they were beautiful.
They were beautiful.
I mean, they were. There was a digital PDF. We didn't faff around with post, which I think that was great.
Another great call.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would be able to resist the siren song of Beautiful Stationery, but I love Beautiful Stationery more than anything in the world. And you don't give a fuck.
I don't give a fuck at all.
And you just emailed them and it was so nice because it was like, all the information is here.
One key aspect is wrong.
Every other wedding I've been to this summer, I have had to photograph the invite or get someone else to send me a photograph of the invite. Mm-hmm. And it's been stressful because it's been like, okay, so now I need to copy from this photo the wedding website. Mm. Wedding PDF.
It was lovely. Gavin's a designer and an artist, and so he was like, did these beautiful custom illustrations, but also scanned in drawings I had done of our dog years ago that he had kept, but also had drawn in like a doodle from like a 15th century architect. Like, it was just stunning, and he cared very much about that. I cared.
Is that when the drawings were from?
Yeah, they were from all over the place, but you know that one of the couple kissing?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was...
But the one of the dog you drew ages ago and he kept. That's so nice. I thought you drew it specially.
He's a very thoughtful man. He keeps these things. But what mattered to me was that we heard live music all day. I just wanted that. I don't know why exactly, but it was important. It was more important than the dress and the flowers and anything like that. And so I went out of my way to really like source people who I thought would be good. And the particular moment that I had in my head since the beginning, even before we got engaged, was I wanted to walk down the aisle to the musical kind of overture bit of Rainy Night in Soho by the Pogues, which is a very meaningful song to me and Gavin. Also an Irish song. You know, we met in Soho. Like, it's a very beautiful piece of music. And I wanted a pipe player and a violin player to be playing that. And that was at the centerpiece of my imagination of the most romantic part of what my wedding was going to be. And that music does not exist on Spotify. So I walked back. We walked back down the aisle to nothing. We walked back down the aisle to our friends and family cheering really loudly and clapping. And it was this realization of like, what got you here won't get you there. That sometimes the best part of a dream is imagining it and imagining what that moment would be like. But once you actually get to that moment, you don't need it.
Yeah, because you wouldn't have been able really to hit the music.
You wouldn't have been able to hear it because we were cheering too loudly.
Because we love you.
Yeah, and also it felt like because there was been all these snafus earlier in the day, everyone in the audience was like, yeah, we pulled it off, lads. Like, we all, like, almost everyone in this room
really
gave someone a lift or did something or did whatever in order to get this to happen on time. And so there was this real communal sense of effort happening.
And that was lovely. And
it was,
I think,
so lovely.
Made it feel traditional in another way. So not traditional like country house wedding, traditional like, this is a church hall and we're all doing our bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, there had to be that bit where they had to go, someone had to go and find our flowers because obviously we were driving around for an hour.
Yeah.
So we couldn't pick up the flowers. Uh-huh. So it's like the flowers, someone needs to bring the flowers to the exact spot where we will be dropped off.
And then we had like Tash in her beautiful dress waving us through to the service entrance. And
just, going in through the woodshed.
Yeah. in through the woodshed.
In the most expensive gowns we will ever wear.
Yeah. It was just gorgeous. And I keep pausing myself as we have this conversation being like, do people want to know about this? But I like talking about it.
And I think people do. I think people want to know all the personal life. People love hearing about other people's weddings. I do anyway.
Yeah, I do. But like, I don't know.
And also the fuck-ups are nice.
The
fuck-ups give it character.
And here's the thing as well is like, not to be like, there's this thing that when Lauren was on the podcast of she cited the wedding from that Richard Curtis movie About Time, where it's like, oh, you know, it was raining and the marquee blew down and they all went inside and they were dripping wet, but it was perfect. And he chose not to change it, even though he has that ability, because it was perfect the way it was imperfect. And the how kind of pat that is, and sort of like, OK, whatever. But wouldn't you have preferred if it wasn't raining kind of thing? But like, there is, I don't know, something in like the most romantic part of the day actually ended up being, you know, Brendan Fiddle was nowhere to be seen. We went all back to the sort of patio of this big house for drinks and canapes. And just inside the door was this big grand piano where we were told, you know, you could hire a pianist if you want. And we were like, hiring a pianist, not really our style. And also the fiddle player will be doing his bit outside, so we won't need that. And then our dear friend Harry Harris, who does the music for this podcast, who has lived in Scotland for the last 7 years, I would say, there or thereabouts, just who is a musician, but a folk musician and a guitarist, just sat down at the piano and started playing. And I was in a band with Harry for 5 years, and he didn't play piano then, but he taught himself during lockdown and he didn't tell anybody. And he just started playing. And he started playing the music that we wrote together when we were much younger people.
Oh no, crying.
and we started singing along to it. And then you and Tash were like, oh, the song. Because like, the thing about me and Harry's band was that it was a band for our friends. Like, we did apartment gigs. Like, we never really bothered.
Apartment gigs is such a big word for sing songs.
Yeah, it was like, we had a couple of apartment gigs where we're like, everyone come over. We've written 4 new songs. It is a gig. Yeah. But like, mostly it's just like at the end of every night it would be me and Harry showing you guys the new songs and you guys going, great, we're going to learn every single word, because that was what our 20s was like, and it was lovely. And we just started singing it, and then everyone was like, what are these songs?
What are these? They seem to know every word.
Yeah, of the song that no one has heard. And then just looking up and everyone being around us. And then Gavin began singing Raglan Road and everyone lost their shit.
It was really beautiful. And my favourite part was Gavin was singing Raglan Road and it was so moving. And your mum was just like, I told him to learn those bloody words. It was just like 5 years ago. And I think that was part of it for me, was like the depth of relationship. It was like everyone knows Raglan Road is Gavin's song.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I would say half the guests, if they've been like, what would Gavin sing? Yeah. At this point would have been like, he's going to sing Raglan Road.
Yeah, that's his bit.
That's Gavin's bit. That's what Gavin does when you say to him, sing.
Yeah, yeah.
And he, when he got stuck on the words, and Tessa, who had never heard the song.
Yeah.
So she was like, what is this song? What is this song? And I was like, it's Raglan Road, Tessa. And she was like, finding the lyrics, finding the lyrics. And she crawled under the piano to give Gavin the lyrics.
She crawled under the piano bench and then lifted up her phone. Like, it was so insane.
So that Gavin could sing with his heart and not be stumbling over the words.
It was so beautiful.
And then me and you and your mum sang Walking in Memphis.
Yeah.
And it was just this moment that you could never have planned.
No, no.
And what is interesting to me is that actually, years ago, that was the only thing you had said about your wedding. And you're like, I wish there would be a room with instruments where people could just start playing and people would just start singing. And I think we quickly were like, well, that's impossible to have at a wedding.
Yeah, you can't especially a wedding abroad where you can't bring the instruments.
You can't just ask people to leave their nice guitars in a room.
Yeah.
And yet that's what happened. It was the only thing I'd ever really heard you express a wish for in your wedding.
Yeah.
We quickly ruled it out as being impossible and then it happened.
Yeah, it was so beautiful. And then like the dinner bell rang and then, we just sang songs until dinner and then we went in and had all the speeches and the loveliness and...
All the speeches and all the crying.
All the crying. I feel like getting into the speeches feels too much into veering into the deeply personal for some reason.
I think so, but I think what was nice about the speeches was that they were all very from the heart. They weren't pat. They weren't.
Yeah.
They were just like, let me tell you, strangers, some friends, about my love for Caroline and Gavin and their love for each other.
Yeah.
And that was really nice.
What was the biggest and most beautiful surprise to me was that, like, Gavin and I had both been very secretive about what our speeches would be, and then we effectively had the same speech in terms of what we appreciated in each other. We came up with the exact same thing, which was basically both of us said in our own words, I'm a miserable bastard and you make life joyful for me and I just want to be good enough to be joyful back, essentially.
That is what you said.
And the fact that both of us thought that we were the miserable bastard and the other person was the joy and the light has like really seen me through.
But that was it. I think I was having a conversation. I've had, obviously, many debriefs about this wedding with everybody attending because I
see the funnest part. It's like, now that we're all back in London.
I see it very much as an extension of a maid of honour role. I must canvas opinions. I must go around with my little clipboard. Mm. And someone was like, oh, they just seemed like they'd never had a second of like stress or doubt about their relationship ever. And I just can't believe that that's real. And I was like, no, all relationships have stress and doubt, but that's what this day is for, is to put a waypoint in to be like, this is the truth. Like when you get right down to it, this is how we feel. And this is why everything else, every other like stress and hassle that comes with like living in close domestic proximity to a person with their own desires and ambitions and dreams and failures, all of that actually comes down to, I need to tell you that you make me really happy. And I need to tell you that in front of everyone we know, so that if we veer off course, we will remember that we did it. That we said, you make me happy. And that's what this is for.
Oh.
It was a really nice wedding.
It was a really great wedding, I think.
But I think we should kind of come to advice, tips and learning.
Advice, tips, learnings.
I only have I have advice for maids of honour. I would say my advice to maids of honour is friend of the pod, Tessa Coates. So many friends of the pod. It's almost like friends of the pod is friends of Caroline.
Well, here's the thing. I'm too lazy to actually seek real guests, so I just keep asking friends over and over again.
So Tessa Coates said to me, bridesmaid, maid of the bride, servant of the wedding. And that was a really useful thing for me to hear because it was like, your job here is to support your friend as she does this big thing. Your job here is to make this run smoothly and beautifully. And I really took that to my heart. And I think that if you are a maid of honour, you should too. And your reward is the honour. You are the maid and everyone will honour you for it. I did not buy a drink all night. Neither night. Didn't put my hand in my pocket once.
Oh.
It was great. People just kept being like, the maid of honour, let me buy you a double whiskey. And I don't know if I do recommend drinking only whiskey and Prosecco for 14 hours. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, it's what I did. Maybe it would be better if you weren't trying to get on a boat the next day. Yeah. That was bad. There was a wrapping the head in the hoodie and lying on the floor of the boat incident. It was good. Poor. But it was powerful. And because of being the servant of the wedding, what your job is to just have your eyes open. The bride is blind. The mm-hmm. bride is blind with people being like, oh, so beautiful. The bride can see nothing. Mm-hmm. Your job is to be like, there's a lot of smashed glass on that dance floor. Mm-hmm. I am going to find someone and make them give me a broom. And your job is to be like, why is there music playing over the speeches?
Oh my God, I remember just like tears in my eyes listening to my father-in-law and then just leaning over to you whispering, can you fucking sort out that speaker?
What was weird is I found out later it was only the speaker above you.
Oh, really? Mm. Oh, so I was like, oh no, it's ruining the ambiance.
No one else.
Just ruining my ambiance.
Everyone else thought I had left because I was too overcome by my feelings.
Oh.
Which is sweet, really.
Yeah.
It's just like the maid of honour can't cope with the father of the groom. And to be fair, I couldn't. It was...
Yeah.
It was really moving.
Yeah.
What other learnings do I have? I would say people are going to have the wedding they're going to have. And by that I mean, I could no more have made you care about flowers mm-hmm. in like February or March, the appropriate time to book a florist and a photographer.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I had made you do that. And there was a point where I was like, I'm going to have to.
I'm going to bully her.
Sit her down
this.
And be yeah. like, do it now on this computer. I don't care.
Very much eat your greens.
Eat your greens. And... if I had, it wouldn't have been your wedding. It would have been my wedding.
Mm.
And I think if you've got a friend who is a complete control freak, just give in to the tide. Just be like, sure, you're a control freak. You want to book all the flowers mm-hmm. a year in advance and it really, really matters to you, and accept that that's what you're going to do. I think actually my big advice for everybody involved in a wedding is just go with it. Go with the tide.
Yeah.
Don't fight it. As I kept saying to you on your wedding
so
day,
true.
Go limp, Caroline. Go limp. Go limp.
You gotta go limp. Particularly in those last weeks, you gotta go limp.
I think I started saying, like, it is generally my life motto when faced with a difficult circumstance.
Yeah.
Just go limp. Go limp.
Totally.
Do you want to be right or do you want to be happy?
That's it. I remember that there was, like, in the final, like, week beforehand, we had realised that we, not to go into too much detail, but, like, a friend of ours, we thought he was leaving his kids at home. It turns out that he thought he was bringing his kids and we were like, oh, crap, we haven't provided for this at all on like a food level or on a like size of the room level or like entertainment for kids level or whatever. And it was like, I could freak out about this or I could simply find a babysitter and set up a room and just like go limp and be like, yeah, more the merrier. Kids, sure.
I actually
and those kids
that.
Ended up, those specific kids, a great asset to the wedding.
I would say, yeah, the kids who ended up at your wedding made me be like, it's really nice to have kids at a wedding.
It really
That's
is.
That's what it is. Kids yeah. and old people. The whole community must be there yeah. to witness.
Yeah.
You know, I have a friend who, when she got married, was so overcome by the whole community must witness that she invited the man from the stationery shop.
Oh.
Well, he had printed all their wedding invites.
Oh.
And then he turned up with like a placemat that he had made, because of course he knew the date of the wedding. No, it was like a photo book.
Uh-huh.
It was just like a photo album that he had put the date of the wedding on, because of course he knew because he'd been printing all the invites. Yeah. And my friend was like, yeah. And I just invited him because I thought, you should witness this. You should.
That's so lovely.
And I, well, I think that was quite mad.
That's quite mad. It wouldn't be me, but I do
couldn't
think
be
it's
me.
Nice. Yeah.
But I understand the sentiment of being mm-hmm. like, everyone must come together to witness this.
Yeah.
I think it's nice. And it's why we keep doing it, even though it's crazy money, crazy stress, mm-hmm. and is incredibly outdated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously we should all just be like, signing dull forms and being like, I am civilly connected to this man.
Yeah.
I am civilly connected to this person and now you can give me a tax break. No, that doesn't do it. It's open to everyone and we yeah. just don't do it. We're all like, yes, I will pour £20,000 into nothing because £20,000 is the price of everyone we love and care about, or like a significant proportion of those we love and care about, witnessing that we make each other happy.
Yeah. And it's also like you need to bank those memories because you'll need to draw on them later. I think it's interesting because the meaning of weddings has shifted slightly, because people used to get married in their very early 20s most of the time. And it was about launching two people into their adult life together. And now it is about celebrating the adult life that people have built together and the kind of adults that they are. You know what I mean?
Yes. And I think that's why you get that disconnect where, like, people will be like, well, in my day, we spent £20 on a tin brass curtain ring and then we wed in front of the priest or whatever. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, no, this is for a different... It's for the same social thing, but a different rationale.
Yeah.
And I think what it has taught me is that big weddings aren't pointless.
Yeah.
You know, I personally have a lot of respect and love for a small wedding. Mm-hmm. But it has taught me that people spending money on weddings is for a reason. And it's because ritual is important and ceremony is important and tradition is important. Yeah. And being part of that, like, being part of something very ancient, I think is really... really matters.
And it, like, it is the star that explodes and then all this dust gets on everyone's shoulders. You know, I feel like a wedding is good for the bride and groom, but a wedding is good for the families as well. Like, I would say the thing that me and Gavin kept saying in the weeks afterwards is, like, our parents look fantastic. It's like, there comes a point where, you know, I'd say that, you know, most people who are millennials, their parents are in their 60s or 70s. There comes a point in their lives where most of the news and the ceremonies they're getting are to do with illness and death. Like, my dad has been to so many funerals in the last couple of years of, like, his best friends, you know? And that's just, he's in his own form of whittling at the moment, you know? And there are vanishingly rare celebration moments anymore. And even celebration moments for big birthdays, like 70ths or 80ths or whatever, are tinged with a kind of a, I don't know, something a little shadowy, you know, like we all know what's coming kind of thing. I would say that my parents, in the days following my wedding, I saw a sort of a playfulness and a mischief and a goldenness that came over them just at having successfully performed family for several days at people, you know.
It's so nice. But also because it gave them a chance to be like, look at our four golden children.
Yeah.
Look at our four golden children.
And their four golden partners.
Their four golden partners and our beautiful grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And look at us here, like, in this lovely sunlight.
Yeah.
Or small bits of rain because it was still Ireland.
Yeah.
And it was very magical. And I think it was more about the families than I had expected.
Yeah.
And I think that was, in some ways, a factor of you and Gav having been together for so long. But I also think that's what weddings are for. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to kind of bring it back to the more general. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, weddings are not just about the couple getting married. Weddings are about everybody. And it makes people who are married think, remember our wedding? And it makes people who aren't married be like, what if we got married? And mm-hmm. it makes people want that. It makes people think about who they love and who they would stand up in front of people with. And, you know, someone said to me it was a very kissy wedding and it was such a kissy wedding. Everyone was kissing.
Yeah. I was kissing lots of people who were in Gavin. Just real, real smooching people, you know?
It was a real smoochy wedding.
Yeah.
Full of love.
Full of love. Yeah, and I would say if I have very few regrets about, even about the fuck-ups, because I did think they sort of made it. I have only two regrets. One of them includes the website hur.com. H-U-R-R.
Do we have an offer code?
Do we have an offer code for our listeners? Listen, I have no problem with HUR.com or HUR.com. But I got it into my head that I needed this Lulu Guinness bag and I rented it off the website at a cool £28 a day. And I then left it at home. And then I got home after, you know, spending like £110 on a designer bag I did not wear. And then I posted it back to the owner. The package got lost and for about a day and a half there it looked like I was on the hook for 500 quid for a bag I had never worn and will never see again. And then yesterday I got the news that she received it. It was the largest relief. I feel like I've been spared from the guillotine. So my big regret is ever going down that road in the first place because the bride doesn't need to carry anything except for flowers for 3 minutes.
The bride doesn't carry anything. I think that was actually another maid of honour job, was move the bride's jacket.
Yeah.
Move the bride's jacket from place to place. Mm-hmm. The bride has left a pencil. The bride has got a thing. Mm-hmm. Put it, the bride's veil is somehow on the floor. Just put that in a place.
Put that, yeah. Put my stuff in a place. Thank you. And then my second, not regret, because the thing about the venue was that it was like only, it was a certain capacity. And so we had to be fairly ruthless about, you know, who we were whittling our wedding party down to. But my parents, when I was planning it, were quite, they felt a type of way about them not getting more invites for their friends. And while I do feel like I was hamstrung by the venue and by the type of wedding I wanted to have, I was very much believed when everyone told me your wedding, you should do your wedding exactly how you wanted to do, which I did. But like also I understood on the day that like, oh, this is a big day for them. This is about showing your friends and peers that you successfully raised a child to the point where they are being accepted by another family. And like, that's huge. And like,
it's so primal to be like, and now she goes to a different tribe. See, they accept her and her customs.
Yes, because she's normal and we made her that way.
We made a normal one.
Yeah. That's, we made a desirable one. And it's really hard to make a normal desirable one. Like,
yeah, there's a lot of awful people in this world.
Yeah. Yeah, and I wish I had been, not even necessarily that I'd given them more invites, but maybe I should have a couple of more, but also that I had been sensitive to them wanting to invite their friends in the first place.
That's really nice that your main lesson is the dream is not everything, and also be kinder to your mum and dad.
Be kinder to your mum and dad, yeah. Because even if your defence is, well, I'm paying it for it myself, I should be able to invite whoever I want. It's like, yeah, but they paid for your whole life for about 20 years.
They paid for your whole life for 20 years. Yeah. Let them have a pal.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I was a bit of a pig about that, to be honest.
You were a pig?
I think I could have been less of a pig about it.
It's wedding madness, babe.
It's wedding madness.
That's anyway. Why you rented a small shell bag.
Small shell bag that I never used and almost paid almost a grand for. So that's it.
Yeah, I don't think I have any more learning about weddings.
I highly recommend it. I also don't think anyone should be bullied into having an original wedding when a traditional wedding will do. I think there's a real pressure on women to be like, wear a jumpsuit and a slash of red lip and, everything.
Walk down some stone steps in your jumpsuit with a single red lip.
Which, like, I'm sure that the first jumpsuit bride who had a red lip and, I'm sure she had a great time and it was all her idea. But, like, I think there's a pressure to seem like you don't care.
You're not buying into the whole myth. You don't need to wear a dress and tell everyone. But maybe you do. And that's okay to want that.
It's okay to want that. And it feels great.
I mean, it's really a sentimental garbage message, isn't it? Mm. Weddings, they're sentimental garbage.
Yeah.
What could be more garbage? What could be more sentimental? Yeah. And yet, they're nice. And, you know, if we go back to first principles of this podcast, it was traditionally feminine coded things are nice.
Yeah.
Even when culture tells you you should be over it or it's not cool. And your wedding was not cool. It was so fun and nice. Mm. But it wasn't cool and original. It wasn't like, wow. And yeah, it's all graphic.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.